This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before we get to today's great guest, I'm really jacked up to get on with that. I want to direct attention to my website, www.markpattisonnfl. There's a lot of good stuff. There's a bunch of podcasts. You can go and be inspired by other amazing people like the guy I have on today. Number one. Number two, we continue to raise money for Amelia's Everest, which directs to Higher Ground, an organization about empowerment here in Sun Valley, Los Angeles, and New York. And of course, you can see my wonderful film, The NFL Shot, called Searching for the Summit. It won an Emmy for Best Picture this past year of my incredible journey up and down Mount Everest. So go check that out. Okay, so on that note, let's jump into today's wonderful guest. His name is Yuri Boretsko.
Yes, you got it right.
Did I get it right? All right.
Hey, yes, you did pretty well, yeah.
Well, hey, listen, I appreciate this. And once again, I want to thank our common buddy, Marco, for connecting us together. You are involved in such an important cause right now, Ukraine for Hope, Hope for Ukraine. And, you know, it's unbelievable. You are Ukrainian, so you understand directly the pain that's going on. And so I want to talk about, first of all, this organization that you are the president of, Hope for Ukraine, when it started and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, so we started back in 2016, and we started, you know, as a response to initial invasion of part of the Ukraine back in 2015 by Russian separatists. At that time, we had the first wave of these refugees. So we started to help them out and also help children who are HIV positive. You know, a lot of people don't know, but, you know, Ukraine had the second largest HIV positive population in Europe outside of Russia, right? So that was our initial, you know, goal. To start this, and then, you know, we start tackling different projects such as medical support programs, where we would, you know, bring kids from Ukraine to here, pay for their treatment, bring them to Europe. So family support projects. So it's been ongoing humanitarian project done all across Ukraine. And then, you know, February 24th happened, which is 9 months ago, full-scale invasion by Russians, and then that just took a different meaning for me and to everybody here at Hope for Ukraine, because the amount of need and amount of work we had to handle it was just a 10x. So it's been like that past 9 months. So in the past 9 months, we've been fortunate enough to, at this point, to provide over 40 million meals in Ukraine. You know, we on average, you know, we are providing 1,500 families each week with a grocery bag that lasts them for 2 weeks. You know, then we have rescued about, at this point, I believe, over 500 people from the war zone. And we have a center in Lviv, Ukraine, that been that at the present time we have 80 people that reside there full time, but it's been a home for at least 1,300 families ever since the war started. So it's been ongoing ongoing operation as far as trying to help as many people as possible. But you know, every day we wake up and we're faced with another challenge. You know, like right now we were thinking about, like, December comes in, we're going to concentrate on Christmas gifts. And then, you know, the energy crisis came there where, like, a whole country without electricity. Now we're trying to supply that. So it's that's basically what we're doing. And a lot of that information people can find on our website, hfu.org. There's a lot of projects we do. We give people daily updates. We have, it's called Daily Impact. So we want everyone to know what's going on the ground each and every day, so they can go there every day and give you update daily.
Yeah, got it. So let's back up. Let's break this down a little bit. Okay, so ironically, you started this organization in 2016.
Yes.
And then just the way that the world shaped and Putin and all his evil decided to start bombing the hell out of Ukraine because he wants to take that territory back. That's the bottom line, right?
Sure.
And so because you already have the infrastructure in place, you're able to quickly load up and redistribute what they need. So many people being displaced, ending up in other countries. Now, you guys, I believe, are based in New Jersey in the U.S., correct?
Yes. Yes.
So tell me about the logistics when we're just, and let's just bring this up to 9 months ago, right, where you're talking about the main focus at the time was to bring groceries and food to these various people that are being displaced and ending up in other countries and other probably regions of Ukraine. But tell me about the logistics. Does the food originate from the U.S. or are you buying this stuff from Europe? And then are you placing this in the surrounding countries like Poland and others? How does that whole work?
So basically, you know, we were fortunate enough to build a decent network of volunteers all across Ukraine. So we have a center in Lviv, Ukraine. So when this war broke out, we were fortunate enough to purchase 660 tons of food in Europe to get it quickly to Ukraine. And basically that food has been feeding along the lines all the way until now. And also right now we also ship some stuff from here, but the first response was from Europe. So basically the way it works, we purchase stuff in Europe, we brought it to Lviv, Ukraine, and from there we have daily vans that all our volunteers come, we load them up 2-3 tons of groceries, and they take it to various parts of Ukraine. You know, in the beginning of the conflict, the big need was Kyiv region, right, when Kyiv was occupied. Then they left, you know, Ukrainian army drove them away. So we had a big humanitarian crisis in that part, you know, because every time Russians leave, you know, it's disaster. I'm talking about humanitarian disaster, you know, the bridges destroyed, yeah. You know, supply chain destroyed, people have no heat, no water and stuff like that. So we tackled Kyiv region. Then we had, you know, Kharkiv region, right, where the Ukrainian army drove them out of Kharkiv region. So there was a whole part of that area that had to get help. Now Kherson region has been cleared part of it, right? So it's an ongoing, you know, and the need is so great at the present time, you know, like you know, you can pull the semi to any town in Ukraine, and that semi will be cleared out in a matter of 2 hours, because people need food, people need warm clothing, people need basically everything. Because we have, you know, I just checked the stats yesterday. So at the present time, you know, 14 million Ukrainians have been driven out of the country, which is went outside of the country as refugees. You know, before the war started, population of Ukraine was 45 million, I believe. So you just see the picture, you know, 14 million are gone. Then we have you have 4 million which are internally displaced. So like the town where the city where we operate from, Lviv, is right on Polish border. So the population of that is almost not double, but about 50% more, because all these people from eastern parts are moved there to find a safer place, you know. So we have ongoing problem how to help those who basically left with one suitcase. And we have they have no place to stay, they have no jobs, and they have no food to eat. So that's basically what we work in day and night now.
Yeah, so many questions. So is there any part, let's just take Kyiv, for example, and the place is destroyed, like you talked about, the buildings, the infrastructure, the bridges, the roads, things like that. Is there any kind of commerce at all going on in Ukraine, anywhere? Grocery stores open, gas stations open. Is there any of that actually still happening?
So it does happen, you know, it is happening. But the problem now that, you know, they've been hitting energy system of Ukraine. So a lot of right now, the present time, on average, Ukrainian home in Ukrainian city have anywhere between 4 to 8 hours a day light. So a lot of stores, if you go in Ukraine, even supermarkets, they are open, you know. Can you imagine you go in the aisle and the only lights are the fridge lights? Because even if they open, they need to conserve the energy so much. So, you know, in the places that the Russians have been driven out, and, you know, the life as far as commerce, as far as, you know, stores, they start opening up. But, you know, the people facing issues with supply chains, you know, because a lot of the bridges has been destroyed, you know, yeah. Even if you have a truck to deliver, let's say, milk, bread and stuff like that, it's really hard to do that on time. You know, we just recently had our team in Kherson region, I believe, you know, so, you know, you can see, you know, they went to the store and the shelves are basically empty, right? So the store is open, right? But there's not much to sell because they just cannot get deliveries, you know. So, you know, they set up the shop outside and they were giving our food baskets, food bags to those people who were trying to go to grocery store to buy something, but there's not much to buy. So that's basically what we're facing in areas that, so, you know, the business trying to come back, but it's really hard because it's constant sirens, you know. You know, it's daily. You know, you get air sirens every day, so you know they have to shut down everything. You know, and they cannot really. So the economy doesn't really function as it's supposed to.
And are there parts of Ukraine? I mean, when we talk about Ukraine, we normally, you know, here in the States, to me at least, I kind of just lump it in as, you know, the entire country. And are regions of the country that haven't been touched yet, like life goes on daily as it were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, or is everybody being affected by this invasion?
Everyone is just, you know, it's a level of destruction, right? Yeah. So, you know, Russian, they have these long range missiles, you know. And like Lviv, where I am from and where we operated, is this the largest town next to Polish border, you know. Like, I don't know if you, yeah, but you know what they've been doing, you know, even though there's not like a massive destruction of the buildings and stuff like that, but they have been targeting you know, energy, you know, substations and stuff like that. So right now we all across Ukraine, you know, even if you look on a satellite imagery, you know, it's everything is dark for most of the time. Because even the towns that are not exactly on the front line, they still facing, you know, complete blackouts and daily, you know, air defense, you know, sirens, because they try to target everywhere. Yeah.
And you brought up energy now 3 or 4 times, and the idea from Putin is because it's probably very cold over there right now to hit the energy, so that just creates more suffering. People are trying to figure it out, trying to get warm, and by not having light power for heat, things you can cook on, things, you know, it just complicates everything in terms of just caving in. What do you think one of the things I've thought about a lot, and I'm sure you've thought about a lot more than me, but what the end game is, you know, I Ukrainians will never quit. They have this, every man, woman, child, it seems like they are dug in. We've seen examples of this from Afghanistan, you know, when the U.S. was occupying and trying to get rid of the Taliban. And you saw that before in the 80s from the Russians, same type of deal. And when you invade these different countries, you know, it's just like these people aren't going away. And it's just like I just don't understand what Putin, where he thinks this thing is going to ultimately go.
I mean, his life is on the line. He has nothing to lose. I mean, at this point, one thing you got to understand that, it's an end game for him. You know, he's going to be gone if he's going to, let's say, because he needs to have results for his internal crowd, he needs to see that he can win, he can do stuff. So what he's doing now is he's trying to intimidate civilians, right? Destroying their livelihood and everything. So we are seeing, the terrorist state operate like never before. And, the end game here is that, we will fight to the end as a country. Because, if we're going to stop and we're going to make a peace deal of any sorts, he will go back, he will regroup, and he will start again in the next few years. This guy doesn't look at the Ukraine as a country that can exist. You know, he's the things that Ukraine and Ukrainian people is part of his, big idea of Soviet Union. And, he's not going to stop. So at this point, as long as we have support and as long as, Ukrainians will fight till the last soldier, because, that's our future. We cannot lose this. Unfortunately, there is no other option, at this point.
Okay. So you started Hope for Ukraine back in 2016. And you're trying to help a lot of people in Ukraine for different reasons, and now it's escalated. Your day-to-day, in which your whole mission is, I would assume, is two things. One, obviously providing the things that you mentioned before, the medicine, the food to the different people, clothing, warmth, ways that they can continue to survive throughout the country. But in order for that to happen, you need to be out fundraising and bringing in donations and things like that so you can help provide these different things for these people that are in these awful situations.
Yes. I mean, that's why, we're so grateful to everybody here in the United States and all across the world who have responded and then who have, expressed desires to help. We have a lot of people who come volunteer, who have set up different collection sites all across the United States. We have folks who ship stuff to us from Hawaii, and we're located in New Jersey. It's just the outpouring of love and support has been tremendous, and then we as a team, right, we're making sure that we are diligent, that everything that comes in, that we can impact as many lives as possible. So whatever we raise here, we ship containers of humanitarian aid almost twice a month at this point. And then we have the team on the ground who, as soon as the container comes in, we start tackling the most, desperate parts of Ukraine, going to the, if you look through the places we go, our volunteers go to places like Bakhmut. Bakhmut is, if you read about it, is one of the hottest contention points right now in Ukraine. The city is under constant. But there's still civilians living there, so they need food, they need water, they need clothing. So that's basically, our daily operation is raising funds here, organizing, humanitarian aid from United States. Whatever we cannot get here, we purchase that in Europe and get it to Ukraine as soon as possible so we can help folks there.
It certainly makes sense where you'd pack a container out in New Jersey. But where are these containers floating to? Where do they enter port?
So they go to Poland from here, and then from there we get it on a truck and get it to Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the scary things out there is that there has been this whole notion of, you know, there's been a number of countries that broke away back in the day from the Soviet Union, that if they can successfully take out and take control of Ukraine, then they would go after some of these other countries. Now, fortunately, you know, they're part of our alliance. You know, you attack them, you're basically attacking us, and that's probably been a deterrent, you know, so far. But, you know, I mean, I think the U.S. is doing what they can to help as much as they can without being directly involved in a full-scale war with Russia, right? So it's been an interesting dance, you know, that the U.S. has done. Going back to the fundraising, I would imagine that, and I have no clue, I'm just guessing this, is that you've seen just a massive increase from when you guys started this organization in 2016, that people didn't probably really weren't aware of what was going on in Ukraine. And then once Putin started dropping bombs on Kyiv and other places in Ukraine and destroying lives, and, you know, it was the front page of every newspaper every day, and that's when you saw this massive increase of just this injustice that's going on in the world with this evil person, you know, sitting on top of the Russian government, just destroying people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the testament that light will always prevail over darkness, you know, because, you know, when, how they say, you know, when there is a darkest time at night, the light shines the brightest. And that's what we've seen from the folks, you know, coming together, helping, you know, every way they can, you know, donating and stuff like that. And that's basically what's keeping us going, because if, you know, one thing, you know, the bravery of Ukrainian people, you know, the whole country got mobilized. So that's a part one, why we're still standing. Part two is because of all the people all across the world who's backing this fight for existence of Ukraine. So, you know, we witnessed something that we have not seen, you know, since World War II, you know. I mean, I tell everyone, you know, there is always one crazy person once every century, you know, and you know, last century had Hitler. Yeah. Now we have Putin, you know, and you know, we're gonna look back, you know, our children look and read in the history books what we're talking with you right now, and then that's basically comes down to everyone's, you know, asking themselves, are you on the right side of the history in the end of the day?
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I again, like you mentioned, Putin started dropping bombs 9 months ago. You're from Ukraine. Have you been back to Ukraine in any part of the country within the last 9 months?
No, and unfortunately, I was not able to get there, you know, and I do want to go back there, but it's been just so busy here that, you know, everything that's going on is very close to me, you know, because my father is 85 years old. He's still there, you know, and, you know, seeing him, you know, sitting without light for, you know, 16 hours a day, you know, in the cold, you know, and running generators, it's not a pleasant, you know, and he doesn't want to leave, right? Because he says, you know, this is my country and then that's where I want to die. So that's basically. So, you know, that's why I haven't been there, but we have, you know, our vice president, my brother Yaroslav, he's going there regularly. And then we also have team on the ground that constantly. But as soon as, you know, I'm able to do that, I'll definitely would love to.
Well, it's not like you don't have your hands full, you know, with all this different food and supplies and logistics, you know, with shipping containers around the world. You know, certainly to get to all those mission critical needs to the people of Ukraine. You know, I brought this up before about what is the end game, and just like fingers crossed that everybody can get through the winter into spring. Yes. And some good things will start to happen. And I don't know, like going back to kind of what you're saying before, you know, it's kind of either do or die with Putin. And I don't know if people inside the government need to take him out or how that's all going to ultimately play. But it's going to be an interesting couple months to see how Ukraine, with complete certainty that they will continue to stand and fight and be bold and brave in their fight against the Russians. And it just seems like there's more defeats day by day from the Russians. They take over a particular city, then they end up retreating, and then they say, okay, let's go in a different part of the country. So, you know, look, at the end of the day, you know, hopefully the things that you guys are doing are gonna continue to keep people's hope alive. That's why you call it Hope for Ukraine. And you can continue to fundraise and people continue to have the interest to support your organization. I did throw out a little donation to you guys yesterday. So, you know, it's so important to help these different people right now, you know, that really need it. I can't even imagine. I'm sitting here in a nice, you know, beautiful house here in Sun Valley, Idaho, and I can't imagine all of a sudden warplanes coming over the top, you know, bombs dropping out of the sky and destroying my home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate, you know, but, you know, my prediction that, you know, by March, April of next year, you know, the Russia will collapse, you know, and it will collapse within. I think, you know, as long as Putin is in charge, you know, this is not going to stop. The terrorism and everything that we see is not going to stop. But, you know, there's a lot of people in his inner circle who will eventually, after a few more defeats from Russian army, you know, there's going to be a lot of infighting that, you know, he won't be able to survive. So that's my prediction, what you said exactly. You know, this winter is going to be crucial, you know, these next 3 months, you know, it's basically do or die, you know. So that's why, you know, next week we're rushing the container full of generators, you know, because that's a really, really important thing right now. So we're trying to supply, you know, big generators so they can heat up the strategic places, you know, like our center in Lviv, you know, there's 80 people that live there full time, you know, so we have a big boiler room that, and everything that it's constantly. So, you know, that's why, like, you know, I personally feel like, you know, like you're on the front line, because every day you wake up and there's some new challenge, you know, that you have to solve. That's why we are grateful, you know, for people like you, for everyone that, you know, spreads this message, you know, that we cannot do it alone. And that's why, you know, I talk to everyone and go speak to everybody who wants to listen. My goal is to just share about what people we've been going through, and share about their bravery, and also thank everyone who's been standing with us, because I mean, people of United States have been such a huge blessing, you know. They have such a big heart and such a desire to help, and that's why, you know, I do believe that's why this country is so blessed, is because of the giving and the open hearts and such a you know. I just before the call, you know, with you, before this podcast, you know, I had a gentleman call me from Brooklyn, right? He's like, you know, I want to volunteer for you guys. You know, my family, you know, his grandparents are from Ukraine, you know, long way. But, you know, he took, you know, 3 months of his life when the war started, and he went to Poland to volunteer there for 3 months, you know. You know, not getting paid, not, you know, losing income that he would earn here. And then now he wants to go back. So that's kind of stories that motivates me, you know, to keep going, and motivates everyone in Ukraine, you know, when they see what American people have done for Ukraine and generosity and everything. It's just, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, look, the what we're trying to do here on the pod is bring your story to light. I think the URL that people can go learn more about what's going on, I believe, is hopeforukraine.org. Is that right?
Actually, it's hfu.org. We kind of shortened it out. hfu.org, that's our URL. So you can go there. You can also go to our Instagram, Facebook. We do constant updates on what we do, so you can find out more on
that. Yeah, and we'll for sure put those things in the show notes. So, listen, it's been you know, enlightening to talk to you. You know, I was going back to what I opened with in the very beginning. The NFL did an amazing documentary on my journey up and down Mount Everest, and they're currently doing a similar type of documentary on six Ukraine. They were footballers. Apparently, Ukraine are big fans of the NFL, and so they've created these different leagues. And when the bomb started dropping, the wives of these six guys, two of them were brothers, fled to Poland. And like many of the men there, they had to pick up arms, which they did. And they're doing video journals every day. And the NFL is putting those things together. Just this tragic story. I think a couple of the guys that where the story originally started, again, they used to be adversaries from just playing against each other to come together as one to fight against the Russians. And a couple of them have died. It's been, you know, tragic, and it's heartbreaking for the NFL as they put this film together. But it's so important, you know, on the NFL bringing more light to the world, and for people like you with these organizations, Hope for Ukraine, to shine the light bright so that we can continue to help and to collectively overthrow what's going on from Putin in Russia. So on that note, thank you very much for coming on. And, you know, when this comes out, let's socialize this and get it out there and make sure that people are aware of how you guys can help.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark, for having me. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, guys. There is the one, the only Yuri. Thank you so much.